This is the Starter Pack.
But you can't see what happened yesterday and not think, I know this guy's good. Now, how great can he be? Jordan Love is fully cemented in that position.
100%.
And now it's how high can he go?
Now, here are your hosts, Max Meyerson and Josh DiMaggio.
It's June 6th, and Jordan Love still doesn't have a contract extension. The talks have gone on all season, all offseason. We've been talking about it as far back as last year after that 9-game streak that everyone still keeps talking about. When it comes to the Jordan Love contract, there's a lot of opinions, there's a lot of numbers, and there's a lot of ideas being thrown around. I want to start here with Mike Tannenbaum, who appeared on Wilde and Tausch earlier this week, where he discussed what he thinks Jordan Love should do with his contract extension.
In terms of the number, if I was him, I'd play it out this year and walk in and say, hey, I want that number to start with a 6 next year. Because, again, given his age and his ability, I think time's on his side. So I don't think if I'm Jordan Love, I'm in a rush to get anything done.
So there's a lot of layers to pull off of that. There is a lot of things to consider from Jordan Love's camp, from the Green Bay Packers camp. When you heard Mike Tannenbaum say, hey, maybe you should just play it out, wait it out, and look for that 6-0 number. What were your thoughts? Because to me, just briefly, 6-0 is coming.
Oh, yeah.
It may not be this offseason, but 6-0, $60 million per year is a number that's going to be happening. Would you suggest Jordan Love play out his contract at the roughly $13 million he's at for this season with the extension he got last year? Or just take sort of the best deal the Packers give him?
Yeah, so I heard this idea brought out there, but I've also heard this rebuttal, and correct me if I'm wrong. So if he were to sign a contract extension this offseason, they could hypothetically rework his deal for this year, so he's not making that $13 million, he'd be making something in the 50s, correct?
Yes.
So then he would be basically punting on this year, taking $13 million in hopes of making $60 million next year, but would that even make up for the 13 that he's making this year as opposed to the 50 so that he could be?
It's funny you mentioned that. Someone on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy earlier this week, earlier today, mentioned, like, if you forego 40-some million dollars, the amount of millions you'd have to make up on the back end to pay off for it would be a lot. Now, certainly there are aspects of, hey, if I'm, you know, if the guaranteed number goes from 140 to 180, you can make a good case of that because a lot of that you get like right out of the gate via signing bonus, etc. There are ways to work around the lost money from the past, but you're still paying a year underpriced.
Yeah, and also you're, again, asking to bet on yourself like you did last year. You'd have to once again come through with another fantastic season, so it's just another added year of pressure. And yeah, you're talking about guaranteed money, but that's, when you sign a contract now, you're guaranteeing yourself a big contract versus having to play yourself into another big contract next year, which I think we all think he will, but he could get injured, things could go wrong. You never know what could happen. So I don't know if it makes that much sense for Jordan Love particularly to wait until next year. I think every QB, like, hypothetically would love to wait another year to get their contract because they believe that they're going to get that $60 million deal. The longer you wait, the more money you're going to make. But when you're in Jordan Love's specific situation where you don't already have that big deal, it probably doesn't benefit you to wait another year.
Yeah, there's a few layers to pull back here on Mike Tannenbaum's comments. First and foremost is the simple fact of generational wealth that Jordan Love is going to get whenever he signs that extension, because I still believe it happens this offseason, and I don't think it's going to end up being all that acrimonious. I think it's probably going to be a pretty reasonable number. It might go over the, my prediction is it goes over the Burrow number, and I think the Packers are happy to play it. But even if he gets 53 and, you know, pretty much matches the Jared Goff contract, you could be pretty happy with that. $53 million per year, that changes things. So for Jordan Love, at this point or at the end of this season, he will have earned around $30 million. And that's nothing to shake a stick at by any means. Because if you're a first-round pick, that's kind of just, you know, you're guaranteed a certain amount of money. But when you start talking numbers where it's like $150, $160, $170 million, that's changing your life and your kid's life and their kid's life and the kids after that's lives. It's a whole different realm. If Jordan Love was in a spot that was, let's say, acrimonious with the Packers, you could make a case where really sticking it to them and getting every last penny out of them would be the right path. Like, I mean, Dak Prescott wrote into his contract that they can't do franchise tags, and he's not signing a deal until he becomes a free agent.
Yeah.
Because then the Cowboys aren't just bidding against themselves, they're bidding against the rest of the NFL. And Dak Prescott has every right to do that because they've bleeped around with him for how many years?
Yeah,
and,
but also on top of that, he's already gotten paid.
Right.
Like, he's already gotten that big second contract.
He has security.
Yeah, so he knows, okay, I've already been through this before. I made the big contract on the other side. Let's just do it again. And like you're saying, he wrote in his contract, he's got the franchise tag, which he went through for a long time. So, yeah, I mean, it just, yeah, that's a different situation. So, yeah, that makes sense because they've gone through that whole thing before. With Jordan Love, this is his chance to secure that bag for his first big contract.
Yeah, and the Packers have to be careful here because Jordan Love's agency, as we stumbled over last time we did one of these, his agent David with Athletes First, Mugalata, something along those lines. They are like the Scott Boris of the MLB. And what I mean by that is they have no problem talking and leaking and getting information out to the public that will make your franchise look bad. So as much as the Packers kids say, you know, we're operating in good faith, a contract hasn't get done, because every time Goody speaks or anybody with meaning on the Packers, they're going to be asked until the deal gets done. That's just kind of how this goes. Jordan Love's going to be asked every single time. I did think he was smart. Was it last week where he was kind of non-committal on the answer of whether he'll play or not? He just said, we'll figure it out, because he's leaving his options open.
Yeah.
In a negotiation, you never want to be like, I'm for sure staying here no matter what. That's just not smart. The Packers have the ability to use the franchise tag and make him play it out. They can do it two more years. So they have 3 years of price-controlled Jordan Love at this point. What doesn't make sense is trying to give him a contract offer that really is, you know, like a low ball offer.
Yeah, can't do that.
And that's the only time I would really suggest Jordan Love to fully go out there and do the holdout thing or hold in, however you want to categorize it. Because if they're offering you 45, then laugh at it and leak to the media and let everyone know the Packers aren't negotiating in good faith. If it's between 52 and 55, then, yeah, you just try and work it out. You try and get, you know, the benefits you can, the workout bonuses or get the franchise taken off, which I don't think the Packers would really be interested in doing had it come to that. But to go into the season at $13 million, like, we've seen plenty of players suffer career-ending injuries that are just freak injuries.
Yep.
So $13 million versus $53 million. Take the 53 and work on it the next time around. I don't think when we talk about hold out, hold in, it is pretty much everything under 50 to me. That's the only spot where I go, nah, this isn't going to work. Because then you're looking at like some guys, you know, you're not even resetting the market. That's everyone's goal. Every player wants to be the highest paid at the position, et cetera, et cetera. So to me, Jordan Love just has to sign the deal this year. There's no way it works better for Jordan Love if he plays out his contract.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I just don't see any world where that happens. The question is now is, what is holding up this deal? Like, what do you think the Packers are offering Jordan Love to the point where he's yet to sign that extension? Have they even offered him anything yet? What is the holdup in this whole situation? Because do you really think it's just a matter of fact of, hey, I want to reset the market, give me 55.5, give me 56, and the Packers are like, no, we want to give you 53. Like, is that really holding up this deal?
If I were to try and like suss out what the difference is or what the issues are right now, it's the amount of years, because teams always want the most amount of control as humanly possible. Jordan Love, who is still young and a first-year quarterback, him signing a contract into his like early 30s probably doesn't behoove him in the best way, because there you can see skill deterioration around that time. So what he wants to do is get that contract where he's like, you know, 30 at max.
Right.
That's where he wants to kind of reset things. And then he goes back to the Packers. And I would bet it's a lot of the Packers saying, well, you haven't accomplished as much as Jared Goff and Jordan Love and his agent
and
going
just laughing at them at that point.
And then Jared Goff and his agent going, well, yeah, that's not how the market works.
Yeah.
And the Packers saying, well, we do have controls. You can't really put it up. You can't really put it against us in this one, because to me, I don't think it's, you know, it can be made out to be acrimonious. I don't think it is that acrimonious. I think it's two sides that understand they both really want to get a deal done, and two sides that are just trying to figure out how do we structure this to keep the team as good as possible around Jordan Love, to not hamstring us in terms of money. There are contracts coming up that we may want to rework, or people who deserve extensions. There's all sorts of things that have to be figured out. And then they, you know, it could be literally working in like how much is a signing bonus?
Yeah.
How much is put in those like weird little void years that they throw at the end of contracts to kind of spread money out? To me, that's where we're at.
We're in the minutia.
Because we haven't heard leaks come out about unhappiness or that's when you can start to debate like, well, which side here is being unreasonable?
Mm-hmm.
At this point, there's not enough. You saw it take place with Aaron Jones. The Packers had one story. Aaron Jones had another. The truth is probably somewhere in the middle. It happens all the time where that's an interesting piece. Like, there's been no news.
No, there really hasn't. That's why I'm asking. Like, what?
Yes.
Because the no news is what's confusing me. If I had no.
It's like, the old adage, no news is good news at this point.
Yeah.
As much as we want the news to happen, the fact we're not getting the leaks, because a leak tells you one side's unhappy, be it the Packers putting it out or Jordan Love and his camp putting it out. That would say, hey, we need to like tip the scales here a little bit. We need to turn public favor. We need to put pressure on. That stuff hasn't happened yet, which I'm happy it hasn't. It would be great for us as we sit here right now, because we would be able to debate the finer points of what's going on here.
Maybe not. Maybe just drag this thing out a little bit and make it a little bit interesting. Because I think that point starts to happen once you get to training camp.
Yes.
That's probably when it starts to get to the point of
leaks. Leaks are coming.
Yes.
If training camp starts.
Yep. Agreed.
They might be pretty tame. You know, they're not going to be fully like the Packers are unserious. They're only offering $33 million a year.
Yeah.
But things will come out, because, I mean, I've been paying attention to this, specifically this story, as much as possible. And every time Ian Rappaport, Adam Schefter, listen to him 7:30 Wednesdays on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, or any of those insiders, they basically have nothing. The story is the story that we've heard, that Goody's told us and that Jordan Love has told us.
Mm.
We both want to get a deal done. This takes time. There's very little wrinkles. Like this is a wrinkle, but that's not from Tannenbaum, but that's not a wrinkle of leaks or reports.
Yeah, it's just speculation.
Adam Schefter added on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy that like it probably needs to be done by July 4th just because people go on vacation. Like, there's just like little things where I'm sure they're asking, when Schefter goes to whoever he goes to and he asks for news, he's just trying to get anything. And they're like, well, we probably, in all reality, we need the 4th of July. Like, that's
it.
Yeah.
4th of July, deadline.
That's all they got right now.
Yeah, right.
Quickly, before we pivot to the next segment, the reason Wilde and Tausch had Tannenbaum on was because he said, aside from Patrick Mahomes, Jordan Love is the first quarterback he would take after him. If they were building a franchise, the next 5 years. Obviously, Mahomes is 1-1.
Yeah.
The next guy he picked was Jordan Love. He gave the reasons that you would expect, you know, talent, youth, ability, and improving of skills. What is your take on Jordan Love being 2 off the board?
I think if you're projecting what he could be based on what he showed the second half of last season, I don't think that that is a crazy statement.
Nope.
I think you can certainly come to that conclusion. Now, me personally, I think I need to see it for one more year before I get to that point. And that's not a knock on Jordan Love. That's just, all right, we've seen it for so many years out of Josh Allen, out of Joe Burrow, out of Lamar Jackson, of the guys who have been in the staple of the top five QB conversation over the last few years. I think we just have to see it for one more season with Jordan Love before we get to that point. But I can certainly see, based on what he did the second half, where you can project out and say, yeah, I think that talent translates to a top two QB in the NFL.
We're going to get to next the C.J. Stroud comments about Eli Manning's career or Aaron Rodgers' career. What makes the debate and the conversation Mike Tannenbaum started interesting to me is there is no clear number two behind Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I agree.
How many quarterbacks have won a Super Bowl that are still in the NFL right now? We've got Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Is that right? Yeah, because Brady's gone. Ben's gone. Yeah. That's actually kind of wild to think about.
So we've got, and we might be forgetting some here. While I talk here, Google the most recent Super Bowls. But if you look at it, like, sure, you can start talking about accomplishments. Obviously, Lamar Jackson has all those MVPs. You've got Josh Allen, who hasn't really achieved much, but has played as good as anybody else. You do have Aaron Rodgers in his Super Bowls, but you don't think he's got 5 years left.
Matthew Stafford has a Super Bowl.
Matthew Stafford, you can lump into that Aaron Rodgers category, where it's like, they probably don't have 5 years in them. You might be lucky to get three if you do. So, Joe Burrow has the Super Bowl appearance. Brock Purdy has the Super Bowl appearance. Jared Goff has a Super Bowl appearance. But we don't look at those teams and go, well, they never get there without Brock Purdy, or they never get there without Jared Goff. It's all really good teams that put things together at the right time, at the right place. Now, Joe Burrow is probably the best case for that. But if you're bullish on Jordan Love, which I am as much as anybody else, to me, there's probably five or six guys that could all go in that second spot, and it's personal preference. C.J. Stroud is the next one you would probably consider there.
I think, this is interesting. This is where I think latest is the greatest in the minds of everybody. Because Jordan Love wasn't a rookie, but it was his first year starting. C.J. Stroud, his first year starting. They were so great, and they made it to the second round of the playoffs. I think, personally, I don't know how anybody could say Josh Allen isn't the second best quarterback in the NFL.
Yes, I don't agree. I disagree.
Unbelievably talented.
I do. I think he has turnover problems, and I think that the Bills have issues there. Not to get too deep on it, but in terms of like raw specific talent,
like a guy that could just straight up carry your football team, and just dominate.
He does have that rare ability, both through the air and through the ground.
Yeah,
he's just a tad erratic. He's a little more erratic than I would prefer.
He's got like a little bit more Favre than he does.
He's got a more bleep it than necessarily I would like him to have.
But I don't know. Maybe I like that.
It does make fun.
Yeah.
We could ask Brian D here, the content manager at ESPN Milwaukee. I'm sure he loves him, but I'm sure it also leads to some of the worst times ever. All right, we mentioned C.J. Stroud, and he made some interesting comments about whose career he'd prefer over Eli Manning or Aaron Rodgers. We'll take a listen next and give you our thoughts. Championships and ring talk are the core of sports radio debate. They're the core of sports as a whole. When we talk about who has the most championships, you can go to LeBron versus MJ. You go Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers. You could date it back Bill Russell. Where does he fit into that? The most important and the most hotly debated topic is Super Bowls, championships, etc. Earlier this week, C.J. Stroud appeared on Million Dollars Worth of Game. That is a Barstool podcast. He had some comments when asked whose career he would prefer over Eli Manning or Aaron Rodgers.
I ain't talking about Tom Brady. If you had to pick a career to have, I'm going to have Aaron Rodgers' career or I'm going to have Eli Manning's career. Who career are you taking?
You want the rings, dog. You don't want
the... That's all that matters, the rings.
Eli got two.
Guess what fans don't celebrate? MVP trophies.
So this debate for me has become pretty interesting. Obviously, I have a well-stated dislike of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
I've made no bones about it over the past 3 years.
Well documented.
Yes, if you listen to any of the the content we do here. The first thing that I want to say is I think Super Bowls matter. I know people who call themselves real football heads, it's a team sport, blah, 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 blah. Well, why does certain guys win way more than others? There are factors there that are more simply than the team factor. Patrick Mahomes is the most recent case of it, where despite looking around his office and going, these guys don't look that good.
Yeah.
Wait, why is he winning another Super Bowl? Tom Brady, you can argue he had great defenses, great coach. The guy just wins.
Yeah.
There are certain people that are just that good. Michael Jordan, LeBron James, you could argue yes or no, but they have an innate ability. And sometimes it's not even they're the most skilled at their position. They perform when it matters the most better than others. Mm-hmm. There's also cases that go the opposite. What is it? James Harden in his career in the playoffs?
Oh, yeah.
His team always falls out of the playoffs with him putting on one of the most dastardly, disgusting performances in crunch time. It's just how things go.
Yeah.
But I do think when you're talking about Hall of Famer versus Hall of Famer, you can argue Eli Manning, should he be a Hall of Famer? No quarterback who's won two Super Bowls has ever been left out.
Yeah, he's going to be the Hall
of Famer. Eli Manning, having his brother, having his father, he's in. It's not that simple.
Yeah.
The fact that he took down one of the greatest teams we've ever seen in history.
That alone.
Yes. Is Hall of Fame worthy performance.
Worthy. Yes.
And he had great defenses at that time. Yes, and there were some fortunate bounces.
Yeah.
But to me, I know people want to argue for MVPs that stuff matters. And four MVPs are great. Four MVPs mean your team is pretty consistently always in the mix. Aaron Rodgers has one of the longest sustained levels of success we've seen at the quarterback position, like playing at an absolute high level. He had a rebirth in Green Bay where he went and won more MVPs. That's all great. But when it comes down to the end of it, the goal every season and every time is to win a Super Bowl. So even though C.J. Stroud seems to, you know, he's doing the right thing. Let's be honest.
He's saying he would be destroyed saying he'd rather be Aaron Rodgers with one Super Bowl than Eli with two Super Bowls. And it's like, oh, all you care about is MVPs and stats. You don't care about Super Bowls.
Right.
Yeah, of course.
And I don't even want to accuse Aaron Rodgers of stat hunting or being a guy who's only interested in it.
Which you certainly could.
You could.
You certainly could.
But also, he was just the damn best.
Yeah, he was.
That's like it.
It's so funny. It's like people say, oh, he loves stat hunting. Well, you do it.
Yeah.
Why don't you throw for 40 touchdowns?
Why aren't other people doing that?
Yeah, exactly.
But to me, I don't think it's as crazy as it's been taken. I kind of side with it. I think when your career is said and done, those MVPs and Aaron Rodgers' success, like, we're not going to look back and be like, damn, I'm really glad they made that NFC Championship game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
You know what's funny is all you think about Aaron Rodgers, you don't even think about the Super Bowl at this point.
No.
All you think about are those heartbreaking, gut-wrenching losses.
Getting smushed against the San Francisco 49ers. Not scoring more than 10, was it 13 points?
I think it was, they lost 13 to 10.
Yeah, against the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah.
To me, even though Eli had some fortune go his way, things worked out the best. We can argue defensive levels and all that, but he got more.
Yeah.
He was at the end. The goal every team sets out for, the goal all 32 teams have today at this very moment, 12:55 on June 6th, it's to win a Super Bowl at the end. So I'm arguing that, yeah, I understand Aaron Rodgers is more decorated and is better at football. But when it comes down to it, people remember you for Super Bowls. It's that easy.
Yeah. No, I think that's, like you said, it's the right thing for C.J. Stroud to say. Now, if we're being honest, I think reality is you'd probably rather be Aaron Rodgers.
When it comes down to what it means to be Aaron Rodgers in terms of financial success and, like, thoughts of your peers, it's much better.
So here's the thing. If you were to say, like, would you rather be Eli Manning or Dan Marino, who doesn't have a Super Bowl?
Right.
Then I'm like, yeah, of course, Eli.
Right.
That's not even a question. Aaron Rodgers does have a Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
Like, I understand it's 2-1. Yeah, that's great.
It is more than one.
There's a difference.
It's double, actually.
It's correct. It is double. But with that being said, it's still Like, he's still gotten to the mountaintop. He's still accomplished the thing that ultimately, like you said, every team wants to accomplish. But he's also statistically one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. He also has four MVPs. He also, his teams won a lot more games. Like, like it's not just, yeah, they won Super Bowls. Those Giants teams weren't actually that good.
If I remember correctly.
They were 8-8, I believe, or 9-7 when they beat the Patriots, who were undefeated.
To even go deeper, I don't know how many playoff wins Eli Manning has outside of.
Right. So you're talking about sustained success year after year after year of not just individually, but as a team winning 11, 12 games, being the first seed, going deep in the playoffs, consistently giving yourself a chance to win a Super Bowl versus basically two miracle runs.
Mm-hmm.
So I still don't. Like, it would make more sense to me if it was Eli Manning and he was still winning 11, 12 games every year and he just found ways to win, even though his stats weren't that great. And you'd call him a game manager or whatever you want to call him. Sort of like how Tom Brady was viewed early in his career, where he was just winning Super Bowls, but he wasn't necessarily putting up this crazy amount of stats. Then, obviously, later in his career, it was obvious Tom Brady was the best quarterback in the NFL. But if Eli Manning was doing that, I would understand the conversation. But those teams weren't that good, and he only had a couple years of really, truly, like, high-level success. So the debate really is one Super Bowl versus and 15 years of really high-level play, or two Super Bowls and a bunch of mediocre play.
That's so to close the loop here, yeah. Eli Manning has an 8-4 playoff record.
Yeah. So yeah,
each Super Bowl run was four games. they were wild cards.
0-4 outside of the Super Bowl run,
and then every other time they were out in one game. So it was good fortune. It was maybe some luck, but it's hard to argue to me. And the thing is, the thing that keeps Aaron Rodgers from people being able to say like, his career was unquestionably better than Brett Favre's. They have the same amount of Super Bowls. Now we watch and we can say, well, I think this guy's a better quarterback. This guy meant the team won more. But it also it's very simple to me, and I think degrading the highs of, well, maybe it was luck or maybe he just won one more. It's tough. The thing that makes it interesting is Eli Manning is the perfect case because there's really no argument saying
who's the better player.
Right. And there's really no argument of, like, if you compare Patrick Mahomes' career or Aaron Rodgers' career, two guys who are both going to be Hall of Fames, everybody's taking Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
And Patrick Mahomes still has more Super Bowls to play in.
Yeah, that's kind of painful to think about, but but yeah, but it's true. But then, like, to even go further to your point, Eli Manning, this is just crazy, was 117-117 in the regular season of his career. He's literally as mediocre as you could be, but he has two Super Bowls.
Yeah, that's the Eli Manning.
Two Super Bowls.
Super Bowls matter.
They do. I'm not saying it's not the case. I'm just saying it's much deeper than just two Super Bowls versus one. It's sustained success versus two miracle runs.
Yeah.
I'm saying I would take Aaron Rodgers, and I wouldn't be afraid to say it if I were C.J. Stroud. How about that?
That's totally fair take.
Yeah.
I know which one I enjoyed watching more throughout their careers, and that's definitely Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. But Super Bowls matter, and Super Bowls are what you get remembered by, and they are what gets you into the Hall of Fame and as one of the greatest to ever live. I don't think there's a wrong position to have here. It's just how much does the sustained success matter to you?
It means a lot to me.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to sit there through some really bad 6-10 seasons like the Giants had to go through.
And I've had the privilege of only really watching the Packers have sustained success.
You don't know that pain, my friend.
I thought I was going to halfway through.
Yeah, I did too.
It was tough times
for me. I was kind of like, I don't want to be a jerk.
You rooting for it?
No, I wasn't rooting for it. But I was sort of enjoying seeing you guys get taken down.
Yes,
Like, yeah, this was
only
really
for it to be at the highest of highs.
just to reach the pinnacle.
Two months later, it couldn't have been
Unbelievable.
Better.
Unbelievable.
All right, coming up next, we are going to have a little more discussion here where it comes to the quarterbacks and Jordan Love specifically. We're going to talk about Jordan's Love's comments where it regards team closeness and the closest he's been since he's been in Green Bay. Is he taking shots at old number 12? We'll talk about it next. This is a starter pack. Before we even jump into this audio, I want to make one thing extremely clear. I don't think Jordan Love is taking shots at Aaron Rodgers consciously. And I don't think it's intentionally. I think sometimes reality just ends up being a shot. Let's take a listen here. This is earlier this week from Jordan Love when asked about the team's connectiveness, how everyone's getting along, how things are going here. This is from Jordan Love earlier this week.
Very special. You know, the bond that I think last year we started off and we came a lot closer just through the adversity we went on in that season and making a run at the end there. But coming into OTAs, you know, there's been so much energy in the building. And, you know, since I've been here, I feel like this is the closest the team's been. And it's very awesome to see. And guys are going out there and competing. And like we talked about before, just having everybody here right now at this time is very cool because you just build those relationships and get closer with guys and get to go out there and work and compete with them every day. So I think this team's in an awesome spot right now.
Since I've been here, this is the closest we've ever been. Now, last year, there's a lot of new faces in town, a lot of faces that left. Aaron Rodgers, Alan Lazard, you can name Randall Cobb. Name plenty of people who are no longer there. Yep. And then there was an influx of a ton of draft picks, a ton of guys that became Packers that ended up being focal points of the season. What's interesting to me is the fact that I take Jordan Love for his word, that I do believe this team, as it stands, is currently as close as he's seen it. I think, obviously, we can all point to the albatross, Aaron Rodgers. I think also you can point to just simply youth. A bunch of people who are all around the same age, they're just generally going to get along better than, say, a 37, 38, 39-year-old guy and guys in their mid-30s versus, you know, guys that are young 20, some of them as young as like 21, 22 years old. Those things all have to factor in. But what I think Jordan Love is kind of letting slip out here is the fact that things weren't great when Aaron Rodgers were here. There was kind of two camps. There was the veterans, the established guys, and the young guys. And the young guys kind of had to figure out their own way. There was cliques. If you go back to high school, there was lunch table politics.
It was a lot of high school drama the last couple years there.
And if you think back to how we talked about Aaron Rodgers, a lot of the things he was mad about or a lot of the things he had grievances about amounted to high school level drama.
Absolutely.
This person isn't nice enough to me. They don't respect me the right way. I'm not respected because I'm older. I have a hard time getting along with these people. That guy's just a kick returner. You know? Things you say about people that don't necessarily need to be said.
Where has that been in the high school drama? I don't remember being in high school, being mad at somebody, being like, that guy's just a kick returner.
What I meant by that is being mean for no reason. Someone just being rude.
Just hit me. I don't know. He just came out of left field and slapped me in the face. It was so funny.
I was just thinking about poor Mark Rodgers when Aaron Rodgers was asked about him. And he got called a kick returner. And the guy's like, well, that's not really my goal. I do it to help the team, but that's kind of where I am right now.
I love that.
The question, very simple. Is Jordan Love taking a shot at Aaron Rodgers?
I don't think so. When you see the headline and the quote just being posted on Twitter, it sure does seem
everyone
like
everyone knew what they were doing when they posted
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. 100%. And that is the world we live in. But when you listen to the full quote, it really doesn't feel... It was sort of like almost a like offhand comment just in the middle of this rant about how close everybody is. It's not like he's saying specifically, oh, man, were we happy Aaron Rodgers isn't here anymore. He's basically saying, like, we just have a bunch of young guys who all grew up together last season. Mm-hmm. And now going into the second full season together, it feels like there's this camaraderie and this growing together, this natural cohesion amongst all the young players on the team versus a team that probably ended all those last few seasons in bitter disappointment with Aaron Rodgers, with a bunch of veterans hoping that they could finally get that elusive second Super Bowl or first Super Bowl or whatever the case might be. versus just a bunch of young guys who are happy to be there and are excited to get things going. So, of course, the vibes are different for this team as compared to Aaron Rodgers-led teams. I don't think it's necessarily a shot at Rodgers. It's more so it's just a statement about where the team is in its progression as a young team learning how to get to that level versus a team that has expectations of already being at that level.
I don't think shot is the right word I want to use here about Aaron Rodgers. I do think it is an indictment of Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. I don't think Jordan Love set out to say anything poorly about Aaron Rodgers. I think he genuinely likes him, and I think Aaron Rodgers generally likes Jordan Love. Yes. Like, I think there's that mutual respect, that mutual, I don't even know if you want to say friendship, but whatever it is. But I do think the reality of it is, and what Jordan Love didn't think about was, when I say we're closer than we ever been, I'm pointing to years previous saying we weren't that close. There wasn't connectivity. People weren't, you know, didn't have the same motivations. We had people that were malcontents in the locker room. We had people that were less invested in the team and more invested in themselves. And that doesn't even have just to apply to Aaron Rodgers. You could put David Bakhtiari in that category. Oh, yeah. You could put Jair Alexander in that category.
DeAndre Campbell.
There's plenty of guys that fit that mold of, yeah, maybe this wasn't the best situation for everyone to be in. What's interesting to me, and why I do think it ends up being an indictment of Aaron Rodgers, is what Aaron Rodgers has done since leaving Green Bay. Most notably, he's yet to miss OTAs any of the 2 years he's been there. Yeah. He's been a full participant. He's been making it a priority of his. So his actions are showing us that even though he says OTAs are meaningless for veterans, he sees a value in it in New York. Now, you could have argued, oh, there's some new faces. You got to learn these people. But now the second year around, he's getting another full OTAs.
Coming off of an Achilles injury
where he could argue, I need to rehab this to strengthen it. Yeah. We're going to have enough time in training camp. The second thing, and it's a thing that I don't think Green Bay Packers fans or people in Wisconsin have really taken note of, is Malachi Corley is living with Aaron Rodgers.
Could you? Romeo Doubs couldn't even talk to the guy.
Romeo Doubs famously said, I learned a lot from Aaron Rodgers, despite him not really talking to me at all. And that's all you really need to know is Aaron Rodgers had gotten to a point through his disdain for Mark Murphy and namely Brian Gutekunst that he gave up on everything else that made Aaron Rodgers as special as he was prior to that. If you remember, before his little blow-up 20-minute press conference where he went after the franchise, Rodgers was at everything. He attended everything. He brought guys along. He wasn't always the best with rookies, and sometimes it was the right decision. Guys like Jay Sternberger, guys like Amari Rodgers, Jamon Moore, they weren't worth the investment of the time, and he quickly figured out, we ain't got anything here. But what he didn't do is afford guys like Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson the opportunity to go above and beyond and excel. He did it very recently with MVS, if you remember, like how close him and MVS ended up being, because Aaron Rodgers knew, I need this guy to perform to reach the highest levels. He didn't offer that to Romeo Doubs or Christian Watson. Romeo Doubs now is a guy we're all thinking, like, there's a potential he leads the team in catches.
Yep.
He might lead the team in touchdowns. Like, there's talent there. It might not be exactly what you wanted the Green Bay Packers to draft, but there's enough here where this can be a vital weapon. This can help our offense. This could lead to more wins. Aaron Rodgers decided, you guys haven't done what I wanted, so I want Randall Cobb, my buddy here.
Yep.
I'm going to throw the ball to Alan Lazard. And that's just what you guys got to deal with. If they're open, I'll throw it to them. But if they drop it, that's it for the day. So when you look at it, he's not saying Aaron Rodgers was the worst and he's the reason we lost. But he is saying things were good around here.
Yeah. And
maybe our lack of connectivity and our lack of connectedness are the reasons why we hadn't reached the heights we should have in years previous.
Yeah, and I think it also speaks to where the situation Jordan Love was dropped into when he was drafted by the Packers. Immediately, there's no way that first offseason wasn't just complete chaos with Aaron Rodgers having to deal with his his eventual replacement being on the roster now, and then the next year of having a disappointing loss in the playoffs, and then the next year of having Devontae Adams being traded. So there was always some just drama going into every single offseason. And last year was a lot of uncertainty. He wasn't really, did we know if he was going to be the guy, if he wasn't. So I just think it's sort of obvious that at this point this team is going to be, you know, better connected. That doesn't mean that in other points in the Aaron Rodgers era that there wasn't that same level of camaraderie. Like, I'm sure in 2011, 2012, everybody was feeling as good, if not better, you know, in terms of cohesion than they are right now. But it's just that in the last few years of the Aaron Rodgers era, of course, it was all controversy and drama and inner fighting between the front office and Rodgers and veterans and coaches. Yeah. I mean, it would be a ridiculous statement for it not to be as close as it is now. I don't know if it's necessarily an indictment on Rodgers or just a obvious stating of the situation that it was the last couple of years.
Sorry, I just melted down there. I had a little freeze of the brain. <All good. laughs> I was like, should I keep going? Or I think Max nailed that, actually.
Yeah, we can probably.
Let's move on here. We'll talk about what we got coming up next. I want everyone out there listening to, I want you to debate in your head, mull over. When I say, who is the Packers' X factor? What is an X factor? How do you define the position of X factor?
I want to came up with the word X factor. Phrase.
Here's what I'll do. I'll research what X factor is defined as, and then I want everyone out there, and I want Max, you to tell me what you think an X factor is, because we're going to do some fun things coming up next with some rankings and guys to watch for the season. This is the Starter Pack. An X factor is described by dictionary.com, Oxford Languages, as a variable in a given situation that could have the most significant impact on the outcome. When it comes to X factors, there's all sorts of things that get thrown out as possible, people possible to be an X factor. You talk about it for games, for seasons, talk about it as a whole. To me, an X factor can't be like your star player. Like Justin Jefferson, of course he's the X factor. Aaron Rodgers, yeah, he's an X factor. Because if those guys don't play well, it's going to be a lot harder to win. To me, an X factor needs to be a guy kind of middling on the roster that if they go above and beyond, they can determine a win or loss.
Yeah,
we're bringing this up because PFF put out their 2024 roster rankings. The Packers were 13th overall behind teams like the Bears, the Bills, the Bears, the Browns, the Bills. Obviously, you've got teams like, let's look here, the Cowboys. You've got the Bengals. You've got the Texans. Those are all teams picked better than the Packers, which I don't take a whole lot of offense to. I don't really put too much credence in a preseason ranking of rosters. All those things can change. But what they did here that was interesting is they looked at the biggest strengths, the biggest weaknesses, the X factors, and the rookie to watch. So they did the biggest strength in 2023, which they labeled as the passing game. What I want to do is, what will be the Packers' biggest strength in 2024? Is it the same thing? Is it the passing game, or is it something else?
Yeah, honestly, I when you sent me this over, I was trying to think of my answers to each of these questions, and yeah, I don't think it changes. Their passing game is an absolute weapon, and it's up and down. They've got two good tight ends. They're 4 or 5 deep at wide receiver. They have a young ascending quarterback. They have a head coach who can scheme things open. Yeah, their passing game, without a doubt, is their biggest and best strength heading into next season.
I totally agree. Passing game has to be it. It's just the amount of depth,
yeah.
Tight end, wide receiver, running back, and Jordan Love, who we all expect to keep improving or at least play as well as he did through parts of the season like he did at the end of the season. The one thing I do want to mention as a potential, as something that I wouldn't be shocked if at the end of the year we look and say the Packers' secondary was out of this world.
Yep, yep.
Xavier McKinney came in, made a huge difference. Javon Bullard played well right away. Keyshawn Nixon as the nickel. And then Eric Stokes, Carrington Valentine, Jair Alexander all played out of their minds. To me, that is a potential of if by the end of the year we're looking around and going, it's really damn hard to pass against the Packers.
Yeah.
I think that could be one thing I want to put out there as a possibility moving into 2024. Let's move on to the biggest weakness. PFF listed the middle of the defense as the Packers' biggest weakness. Now, the Packers have made a lot of investment at that position.
Yeah.
I am interested. Do you still think it their biggest weakness is the middle of the defense for 2024?
Yeah, so they're defining the middle of the defense as interior defensive linemen, linebackers, and safeties.
Yes.
I think that they've done a lot to improve that safety room. I think if I had to specifically say which of those three right now worries me the most, it's linebacker.
Yeah.
So I would just say linebacker in general, with Quay Walker and Edger and Cooper basically being your starters.
Yeah.
That's you're betting on a lot there. There's not a lot of veteran presence there. There's not a lot of proven commodities there. I would say linebacker in general would be the biggest weakness going into the next season.
Now, I think the Packers' interior defensive line will be better.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't shock me if we looked at both Kenny Clark, Devontae Wyatt, and the guys they have there and said we just didn't get enough out of them.
Sure.
That's a potential. I'm very bullish on most of the Packers, and I really like Kenny Clark. I think he's much maligned in a way that he probably shouldn't be. I also think that there's enough young guys there and enough improvement with a change to the defensive line coach that could actually end up being a strength if things go the right way. But that is one case that wouldn't surprise me. And the other one I had here is offensive line depth. Obviously, really? they made a pick, Jordan Morgan. They added also a Jacob Monk from Duke. But I can't rule out that those guys aren't necessarily ready. We had the peck tear from Zach Tom that happened in the offseason. I think there could be a situation. I mean, Andre Dillard, who was a first-round pick that the Packers basically were able to sign for free because he hadn't performed well enough, is the guy taking the first reps. If Jordan Morgan isn't ready, Jacob Monk isn't ready, and Zach Tom either struggles or is slow to get things going, I could see a potential where the shuffling around of the line, they just kind of run out of guys to use.
Yeah.
It's not what I would bet on, but if Jordan Morgan doesn't make himself a swing tackle, I mean, think about the security that they lost with John Runyon, David Bakhtiari, and then left tackle. That's slipping my mind right now. Rasheed Walker. Who did he switch time with last year? This is terrible.
This is good radio.
Yes, this is perfect. But to me, that could be an issue. Do you have any fear about the interior and the offensive line as a whole?
You know, not really. One, I just trust the Packers to find a way to get it right. Like they find ways to get the best five out in the field.
Yes.
Any way they can. Whether it's going to be a strength, I don't know. But I don't really see it being a weakness. And I think you're talking about the depth, and I believe you're making a good point, but I think that kind of speaks to the depth where we're like, okay, well, they have these options. Mm-hmm. They have these things that they can do. They can move Jordan Morgan around potentially. They have these interior offensive linemen who can switch positions. I think that sort of speaks to the depth that they have. Now, obviously, it'll be tested if it comes to that, and then we'll see whether you're right or not. But I think just having the options alone puts them in a good position, because there's teams right now who don't have five starting caliber players on their roster.
Correct.
Injured or not.
Yeah.
And I think the Packers certainly have that. It's just a matter of getting the right five out there.
For everybody yelling at their podcast app, it's Yosh Nijman was the name I was looking for. Yosh Nijman, who the Packers, I think, expected to be more of a factor and was not. Now, and let me be clear here, I am kind of searching for weaknesses.
Right.
Because as we sit here right now, it's kind of hard to find weaknesses.
I think
going into 2023, we thought, well, wide receiver could be a weakness. Yep. The secondary could be a weakness. There was all sorts of weaknesses you could point out. Rookies at the tight end position, they had no one.
Pass catchers, we were like, oh boy.
Yes. So I'm doing my hardest to search for one.
Yeah, I think if you're looking at the offensive line is where you would go to first.
Right.
But I think, yeah, most of their weaknesses lie on the defensive side of the
ball. Yes, I would agree with that, and I think that played out with them basically reinventing the staff and continuing to add more pieces to that defensive side of the ball. Now, here we go to the X factor. PFF picked the X factor for 2024.
Which, by the way, the origin of the term X factor comes from math.
Math?
From algebra.
Makes sense. That's kind of the unknown that unlocks...
Which is way...
The whole formula.
I thought it was going to be way cooler.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what
math is for nerds.
Yeah.
The X factor is Xavier McKinney, which I think, to me... Xavier McKinney is a little too good.
Yeah, I think he's too much of a like.
He's like a star of the defense.
Yeah, I think if you're just going based off what he's done so far in his career, he's one of the more sure things on
yes.
the entire Packers defensive side of the ball.
Correct.
I don't know how that qualifies as an X factor as much as it just qualifies as this guy plays well.
Yeah, and he's going to hopefully change things on defense. Like, yeah, that's what he signed all that money for. Who would you pick for the X factor in 2024?
To me, it's obvious. I don't know what your choice is going to be, but I think Christian Watson is clearly the X factor of this entire team.
Yes.
When he is out there on the field and healthy, he is a difference maker.
Mm-hmm.
He is a big play threat. He is a touchdown machine. He has a good connection with Jordan Love. He does so many things to help your offense and change things and force these defenses to do certain things. You can utilize him in different ways. He is such a weapon, but he's inconsistent, he has drops issues, and he's constantly hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So he is a bit of an unknown, but when he is out there and he's performing at his best, it changes the look of your entire offense.
I agree. The other name that I considered there with Christian Watson as an X-Factor is Dontavian Wicks. Yeah. We all think Wicks is good, but if he blossoms into like a true number one wide receiver, that just unlocks so much for the offense. It unlocks so much reliability. I feel like we're pretty sure about Jaden Reed. He's a playmaker, yes. Guy you want the ball in his hands. No matter what happens, we think we can pretty much rely on him. And I think Dontavian Wicks, if he ends up being a good wide receiver three, that's fine. But you saw so much from him in splashes and spurts where it's like, they might have something real here. They might not just have like a solid depth guy. They might have a guy that could set himself apart from the rest of the camp just because of how good he is at route running.
Yeah, I think the two guys you're probably like most confident in terms of like, I know they're going to be good.
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily great. Is Romeo Doubs and Jordan or Jaden Reed.
Yeah.
I think those are like your two rocks.
You think you know... You can pretty much bank on what they're going to give you.
Yes. Like I think we have a little bit maybe higher expectations for Jaden Reed to blossom into something truly special.
Yeah.
Whereas I think we kind of acknowledge Romeo Doubs as a really good wide receiver, and I don't know if he's top quite number one.
Yeah, he's James Jones. He's a red zone target, reliable hands. He's going to make some tough catches.
Yeah.
He's not always going to get open, but... he's going to make some big plays when you need it.
Yeah, and I think that every team could use somebody like that. Whereas with Christian Watson and Dontavian Wicks, it's sort of still an unknown of, man, they've shown us some things where we're like, holy, like that is special, special stuff. And also of sometimes they're invisible out there, or in Christian Watson's case, he's just hurt.
Yeah. The other one I want to throw out here, and I kind of mentioned it with the biggest strength, is if Eric Stokes is good again, if he can play, if he becomes a decent second option or plays at a level like we saw him play in stretches in his rookie year, that turns that defense into really scary and a defense that is going to make quarterbacks think a lot. So in terms of potential X factors, if he puts it together, the health and play, that takes the defense to a whole nother level in the same way that a guy like Xavier McKinney would do. We got two more here to do quickly. Rookie to watch. Their pick is Edgerrin Cooper. I think that's a perfectly fine pick, pick I would even somewhat agree with, but I want to know what your thought is.
Yeah, I tend to agree with this. I think he's the one who's most clearly a starter, along with probably Javon Bullard would be the only other guy that I would say would be in this conversation. But yeah, I think they need one or both those guys to be really good for this defense to ultimately live up to its potential.
Yeah, I would be between Edgerrin Cooper or Javon Bullard. The one thing I am really interested to see is how much does the new version of A.J. Dillon matter, and how much play does Marshawn Lloyd get? We've heard the Packers and Matt LaFleur talk about how Josh Jacobs could be like a feature back. He can do everything. You know, he's a guy you can kind of just leave on the field. But if Marshawn Lloyd's ready, if he shows the explosive plays, I think that's a guy that could be not only an X factor, but could be like a guy who makes a big difference on the offense that is already pretty strong at the running back position. But you, there's nothing wrong with having a lot of good players at the same position.
the only reason I wouldn't put him in that conversation is because I just don't know how much he's going to see the field with the two guys ahead of him. So that's where
the thing that makes him a possible factor to me is he's more of a
skill set.
Yes, he's more of a true pass catcher than, I mean, AJ Dillon, who is way better at it than I think any of us thought coming into the year. And Josh Jacobs is, while he can catch the ball, it's more out of the backfield. Like, are they going to have Marshawn Lloyd running routes a la Aaron Jones? Like, does he have that ability?
Sure.
And if they do, that just opens up a lot for the offense and Jordan Love as a whole. The last one here is an easy one, and I think one we've probably already discussed.
Yes, we have.
Over under 9.5 wins total. PFF has the over. I have the over. Are you at over as well?
I'm at the over. I think we did the schedule game. Yeah. I had them at like 10-7 or 11-6. So
yeah, over 9.5 to me. I think there are reasons to be pretty safe in making that bet. These numbers are in to get over 9.5. You do have to pay a little bit of extra money. Yeah. I think you have to pay like 140 to win 100. So it is more likely than not that they get there.
I mean, I think that basically the only thing stopping them from doing that is an injury.
Injuries. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just, you know, the something that they
it has to be built into these lines.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, that'll do it. That was our recap of the season. A little looking forward, a little to get us off of just talking about the quarterback, whom I imagine we will be talking about next week. In the week after that, and even after he signs a contract extension, to be quite frank, because quarterbacks make the world go round. For Max, I'm Josh. This has been the Starter Pack.